The Spinoff Podcast Network.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. The Investment Fix Podcast. Tune in today.
Skinny are helping you show how smart you are with the 1Q quiz, an all-new, super challenging and super quick daily quiz built by The Spinoff. Every Monday, Skinny are giving you the chance to prove you're smart with the Skinny Extra Credit question. Get it right, and you'll get the chance to score yourself some Skinny Extra mobile credit so you can text, call, or even video call your group chat and gloat about how big your brain is. T's and C's apply.
Nair is public interest journalism funded through New Zealand On Air.
Nau mai haere mai he kōna I pūrangi tēnei, e pāna ki te ao Māori me te ao hurihuri. Anei ahaua, Leonie Kopia Hayden. This is a podcast about being Māori in the modern world. Tikanga and the law. Transformative, or are we gilding the cage? Welcome to Nair. In December 2020, a wānanga was called to consult with Sir Hirini Moko Mead and Sir Pou Temara to consider whether an appeal in the Supreme Court should go ahead after the death of its appellant, Peter Ellis. The reason? To argue that Ellis's mana continues after his death and therefore his appeal to overturn 13 child sex convictions should still be heard. Tā Hirini and Tā Pou were tasked with answering if tikanga Māori should or could inform the case. Those mātanga concluded that ea, the restoration of balance, hadn't been reached and that the case should continue. This month, the Supreme Court gave their judgments, two in fact, one quashing the convictions against Ellis and one giving the reasons for letting the appeal continue. And the latter was where the issue of tikanga was discussed over 120-something pages. And Tā Hirini and Tā Pou's thoughts were heard. The five Supreme Court justices each gave their individual judgments on how tikanga has and might influence common law. Now, I will admit I only read the judgment by Justice Joe Williams because of the five judges, he was the only tangata Māori, and that's not to say I think the others had nothing to contribute, just that I'm not actually smart enough to absorb that much legal speak all in one go. So I just went with what Masua Joe had to say. And it's some really interesting stuff to say about precedent, about the limitations of tikanga in Western law, and of course possible exploitation, which we'll discuss a bit later with our manuhiri. He concluded that judges don't have the mandate or the expertise to develop or authoritatively declare the content of tikanga. But he also said that the evolution of a bidural system or a bicultural legal system is both necessary and inevitable. So, you can't help but imagine that the courts will have to lean pretty hard on experts like Tā Hirini and Tā Pou and so many of our other mātanga to continue to define what tikanga is on a case-by-case basis. Now, just to explain what common law is and the difference between that and statutory law, statutes are laws written by Parliament, so that's things like the Crimes Act, the Privacy Act, our treaty settlements, pretty much anything with the word act after it. And common law is developed by judges in courts. It's them interpreting actions and principles where no statute exists yet to say that that thing should or shouldn't be done. So in this case, the Supreme Court accepted as common law that the mana of a person carries on after death, even though it's definitely not written into any statute yet. But it's unique because it wasn't a philosophy developed by judges in our courts. It's a first law of this land of tikanga Māori. And of course, judges are going to have cases where they have to interpret both common and statutory law, like in, say, criminal cases. And we have seen the effects over the last 200 years of that discretionary power on our people in the justice system. So it's hard not to worry that this is just another thing for the system to use against us, in the same way that grim corrections facilities have names like Korowai Manaaki. We saw back in 2020 a woman who was given jail time for escaping her COVID-19 isolation. The judge in the case told her that she had breached tikanga, essentially, in my opinion, to shame her. because she was a Māori woman, perhaps that was a form of shame that she would understand in order for her to understand what she'd done wrong. So there are real concerns around how tikanga may be interpreted by the courts going forward and how we ensure its integrity, if that's even possible. No matter what is developed, tikanga more likely than not is going to stay subordinate to New Zealand law. So perhaps it's like Matua Moana said in his Matiki Mai report, the only solution is to burn it all down and start again. But to help us understand all of this, coming up we have a bona fide brain box. We have lawyer Kingi Snauga joining us to make sense of it all, if indeed there is any sense to be found. So stay with us. Whakapiri mai, whakatata mai. Hoki mai anō, I am joined as ever by the wonderful Te Kuru Jews and Mariana Johnson, my co-host. Tēnā kōrua.
Kia ora rā, tēnā kōrua.
Tēnā koe kare, o tērā tēnā tātou e whakarongo mai.
Now this week our kaupapa is tikanga and the law. None of us are experts in this kaupapa, so we're not going to try too hard right now to convince you that we are. But I did think it would be helpful in a sort of a layman's type of a way to have a quick kōrero about what tikanga looks like to us, how we use it in our day-to-day lives. I guess so that people who are listening who aren't as familiar with the term or the practice can sort of imagine then how this might fit into a legal framework, which is going to be explained by our manuhiri in just a moment. So what kind of tikanga do we use just in our day-to-day?
I karakia, i ata.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easy because I'm at the wānanga, so, you know, everything is guided by tikanga. And he whi ako hou tēnei, you know, I've never... Not growing up in Tau Māori, it's like tikanga was not a part of my day-to-day. We followed Catholic tikanga, you know, you do grace before dinner because koinete, beliefs of my father. But and tino paikia o te karakia, like it's something more and more I feel like I gravitate towards. It's like, oh, I feel heavy, you know, I feel taumaha, I feel pōuri, mihi karakia. Tēnō koe I o tātou tipuna. Like that.
Oh, like, absolutely.
Let's make, like, to me now the Pākehā world is so chaotic. It's like there's no balance, there's no order.
There's no rules, man.
There's no sense to it, eh? Everything in Tau Māori there's systems for, there's a way to whakatau, whakawātia, you know, tapu noa. But yeah, probably karakia is the main one. And never underestimate as well, you know, kai as a way, as a, e hara te kai noa, eh? Kai is such an important role. Oh, see, now I'm getting nervous already. I'm like, kai is a tikanga?
Well, we know that there's tikanga around kai,
yeah.
Of course.
How you use it, yeah, aye.
Well, the generic ones, eh, that a lot of people in this country at least might have heard about are, you know, manaakitanga, kaitiakitanga, whanaungatanga, all the tangas. Or the tangas,
but
yeah, I like what you're saying, Mariana. It is a bit of a textbook, a reference, and I guess it can be summarised by saying they are behavioural guidelines for te ao Māori, for Māori society, for how we live and interact with others, and that's just keeping it very surface. I think tikanga is so expansive and intricate and in depth. It'll be a ridiculous attempt to try and explain what it all is in a 10-minute podcast. But I think for people to get an understanding is just, it's a set of guidelines, and they are from way, 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 way back in the day, and they've adapted over time. And we update them to keep them alive. Sir Pau Te Mara always talks about the culture that doesn't evolve will perish. And so we adapt our tikanga to ensure that we are living our best lives, I guess, as Māori.
Tika.
I think people often think that tikanga is just something that you practice, whereas this Peter Ellis case that's come out where the central philosophy, I guess, is that mana carries on after death. So that's less a practice and more a philosophy or a worldview. And so I think we get hung up in thinking that tikanga is taking your shoes off outside the whare and don't sit on the table. And actually, like you said, Te Kuru, these things can be much deeper, much broader, and of course we all acknowledge that they can change, they can evolve, and they can be very different from rohe to rohe.
Yeah, well, those ones, taking your shoes off, I mean, that's very, or much more modern example, I guess, right, of post-colonial tikanga. But I think when you break a lot of tikanga down at the source, you can find, oh, this one's about mana tangata, which is the case with Peter Ellis. It's about his mana as an individual, right, and trying to clear his name, even though he has passed away. And a lot of tikanga around kai, around manaakitanga, they come back to mana tangata, which is derived from manaatua, which a lot of tikanga, you know, are sourced from within our holistic philosophy of the cosmos and our place within it, as opposed to being at the top of the food chain. So that's our indigenous worldview, and tikanga is how we maintain our perspectives in our daily lives, and that you can see it reflected in all those practices, like not sitting on tables. Like, those are the very simple examples.
Aye. I think a lot of the sort of surviving in the household type tikanga that a lot of people still practice every day are to do with kai and your separation of your tapu and your noa. Like, for instance, I keep my tea towels and my body towels separate. And for a long time, actually, that is a practice that was very normal in pretty much all Māori households. In fact, like, the separation of sort of tapu and noa when it comes to kai, to the point where I remember some of my mum's generation, you went and got takeaways in the car, you put the food in the boot. You didn't carry it on your lap to take it home. You know what I mean? Like, just that sort of everyday, like, thinking about those relationships between tapu and noa used to be very much a more central part of everyday living. And I only actually started separating my towels a few years ago because I didn't never really thought of the connection, except for the fact that washing them together had always made me feel yuck.
Yeah, tika.
And then an auntie of mine was like, don't forget to separate the towels. And I was like, fuck, that's what I've been doing wrong. And I could feel it. I could feel how yuck it was.
I had this kōrero with some of my old flatmates, and because they kept putting the tea towels and the towels in there together, and I didn't know what the tikanga was, but it's just, you know, something you always do. And also I'm just like, that super paru, like, you horo your tinana with your towel and then you clean your plates with your tea towels, you're going to mix that all up, like,
yeah.
And they just didn't get, I didn't get it, eh? They were like, why?
It is paru. It's paru as. Like, putting your hat where your kai goes and all of that kind of stuff. It is practical, but it's also to do with, you know, protecting tapu and noa.
Yeah, and a lot of tohunga, one old tikanga was their tohunga weren't, they didn't feed themselves. They were fed with sort of chopstick-like tools. So they didn't touch the food themselves because they were that tapu. Yeah. Tapu and noa are also huge terms that I hope our listeners will, if they're interested, understand that they need to commit to a really long journey in understanding the depth and applications of those terms and all these other terms that we're discussing today as well. But basically, yeah, they are customs. They have come from somewhere. They're not just made up, and they govern how we behave. And different tribes have their own set of principles that have naturally and understandably developed over time and become quite regional. And then there are there are a lot of commonalities and a lot of areas where we share those values and principles, and that's how we can interact as a Māori society. Yeah.
Hi. And like I was thinking before, a good example of how tikanga changes, you know, talking about taking your shoes off when you're inside. You know, after the earthquake, after the Christchurch earthquake, Tuahiwi Marae, you actually were allowed to keep your shoes on because it was this health and safety risk.
You got
to
run. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
True.
Yeah. So, you know, that's a good example of like, because I think it's so interesting to me how easily upset some non-Māori can be when you start talking about how tikanga can change. They're like, it's hardly a set of laws then, and it's hardly set in stone. And it's like, no, like, you just have to fight a whakaro, you know, it makes sense. In that case, that's just practical, that's smart. And that's also an aspect of tikanga, right? It's, yes, there's these really profound, deeper elements like tapu and noa that I won't even begin to attempt to speak to, because kei runga o tēnā wānanga tonu, tēnā akuranga. But then there are just like things that make sense, you know. If there's another massive earthquake, you don't want your feet to get cut up. Well, yeah, you need to get out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, all of these concepts, tikanga, tapu, noa, are now basically things that are going to have to at some point be defined in New Zealand courts. We are Māori, we live in Te Ao Māori, and we can't even do it, not in any, you know, super clear, concise, top to bottom kind of a way. We are aware that it takes a lifetime to start to understand these concepts. And now our legal system hopes to somehow enshrine them in common law. So if that didn't already sound complex enough, we're going to get really into the nitty-gritty after this with lawyer Kingi Snauga, who's going to, you know, give us a bit of insight in how this is actually going to work, if it's going to work at all. So stay with us. Heia kua nei.
Participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spin-Off. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spin-Off member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
Hoki mai anō, I am joined once more by my co-hosts, Mereana and Tukuru, and we're very honoured to have with us today as our special manuhiri, Kingi Snauga, no Ngāpuhi, ngā te whakaue, te whakatohia, me ngai tahu. Kingi is a criminal defence lawyer with a master's from Harvard. Hey, working in Tāmaki, he's a youth advocate. He's worked in First Nations territories in North America, and he was a part of Peter Ellis's defence team. Tēnā koe e hoa, no mai haere mai ki nē.
Kia ora tātou.
Kia ora.
Now, I'll just say this up front. So we're not really here to discuss the details of the case, of the Peter Ellis case, but rather the development of tikanga being accepted in common law in Aotearoa and what that actually means for us as Māori. And I suppose I say us as Māori because, you know, those involved in the case were Pākehā. And whilst I guess what we were talking about was the mana of a person that applies to every single person, I guess what I'm interested in is going forward, the more tikanga meets common law, it's going to be Māori that will be more affected by these uses of common law. Do you think that's fair to say?
Absolutely. It's kind of our culture that's being used by what is predominantly a European judicial system or court system in the common law. And the way that I think about it is it's really the judges are just catching up to what we already know, is that tikanga is the first law of this country. It's what people like Dr. Warner Jackson and others have been saying for years and what we know. So it's kind of like the court's just kind of reaching the point that we've already been at. If you go to a marae, what is the law of the marae? It's not common law statute, it's tikanga, right? Kawa.
Yeah.
So, that's a fair thing to say. But I think... Yeah, like the good thing about the Ellis case, and I won't talk about it too much, was that we had a wānanga, so that was a way to protect what tikanga came before the court and how it was used, because I guess a big fear for all of us in the Ellis team and as Māori is that our culture is going to be misappropriated by largely Pākehā judges or, you know, in like many ways that our culture could be misused. And that's a good thing, I think, that we are having those kind of checks. So the people like Sir Pō Te Mara, Sir Hirini Moko Mead, were there in the wānanga, and I think that made us feel a bit safer.
Yeah, that was a pretty hefty wānanga, near two days, was it?
Yep, 2 days. There were, yeah, I can't remember all of the pukinga, but there were a good bunch of about 10, I think. And that issue around, yeah, continuation of a case after the death of a applicant. What would tikanga say about that? And we just kind of steered the discussion, but it was mainly led by Sir Po and Sir Hedini Mukomid. And when people have said to me, oh, how is it that, you know, or raise issues with it? Well, I'm like, if you have an issue, you should go talk to Sir Po Te Mara if you dare to. But, you know, like, I think it's healthy to debate it. But that, you know, that's not always going to be the case, that we can have those wānanga to ensure that the cultures, our values are protected. And that's kind of the issue, I think, moving forward. When we don't have wānanga, what safeguards do we have in place to ensure our culture isn't misused?
And with the mātanga that were at that wānanga, because I believe there were others other than just Ta Po and Ta Hirini, were they all sort of unanimous that this was a correct way forward for our legal system?
Yeah, I think there was some fear that was reflected in the statement about the law moving forward, and probably like the Takamori case, Sir Po was involved in that, and I don't think he had a great experience because there was disagreement moving forward about the place of tikanga Māori. So the way that we thought was to protect his mana and the mana of those pukinga was to hold a wānanga that was by agreement by the Crown and us. You don't always get agreement, so I think, you know, you have to acknowledge that the Crown and the Ellis case did the right thing by saying, let's hold a wānanga. Yes, we agree with what they say, because like in Takamori, there was a disagreement, and that ultimately meant the judges, where they're dealing with the dispute, have to weigh up, you know, the two sides of should we go with the British common law interpretation of burial rights or tikanga Māori.
Can you just explain the Takamori case for our listeners a little bit, who might not be familiar with that?
Yeah,
Takamori v. Clark.
Yeah, it's like, can I remember what happened in that case? No, more about a
Cliff Notes.
Māori man who lived a long time in the South Island with his Pākehā wife and kids, and the whānau took him home and buried him, and the wife argued that she had rights to exhume him and take him back to Christchurch because that's what he wished. So the clash was around the British common law rights of an executor or someone who's charged with the state of a deceased versus te ao Māori and you know, tūhoi sovereignty, I guess, and how do those two interact? And in that case, I think what ultimately happened was tikanga was put to one side and the common law, the British law, won, which is, you know, what we don't want. That's not a te tiriti future. That's, you know, where there's those clashes that ultimately it's the Pākehā law that tends to win.
But it's tricky, eh? Because, like, you know, it is a case-by-case basis at the moment where tikanga has been tested in common law or applied to cases. And, you know, you can't, well, can you? I mean, what do you see as the way forward? Do you have a panel like with Ta Po Te Mara, and every time tikanga is raised, that's who you go to? Because otherwise it's been left up to the courts, right? And do they have the expertise to make rulings on it? Probably not.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I come from a, I feel like such a law nerd, like the legal realism school of thought, which is that judges are people that pull on their values and their background when making decisions. They're not like robots that decide the law, you know, law says this, so I apply it. They, you know, they bring their worldview into the decision making. And besides Sir Joe Williams, there's no other Māori on the Supreme Court. And in fact, it was Justice Glazebrook who raised the tikanga issue. And she seems to be the most progressive. So I think we've got a pretty progressive liberal bench at the Supreme Court who I think are really keen to see transformative change in the way that they can. But yeah, without Joe there, without Susan Glazebrook, without the Chief Justice, you are probably not going to get that outcome that we got. Because people bring their worldview into the decision making. So yeah, I think having the wānanga is a great idea, but you know, you're not always going to have Natalie Coates and others on every case as well. Like having good lawyers that are you know, onto it, like Nedley and Horiana and Matanuku, Mahuika. I think that was another key part of it, having good legal brains.
What do you think about, should it be, I mean, there are some who would say, you know, the Waitangi Tribunal is our court that's set up to deal with matters of tikanga. Do you think that that's an appropriate way, if matters of tikanga are raised in other courts, that it go through the Waitangi Tribunal? Could that be a way to ensure that it's safeguarded?
Yeah, in the Alice case, sorry for those listeners who think, Jesus, this is like a law lecture.
No, it's good.
There was discussion about referring cases to the Māori Appellate Court, so that very point you're raising of our Māori, think about some of our Māori land court judges, they are super onto it, dealing with tikanga day-to-day in their job, they should be the right people. So, yeah, I agree, that's definitely something the court should do. But I guess, you know, I don't want to say that judges have ego, but they do, I think. And, you know, I would like to think that a judge would be willing to give the decision-making over to a Māori Land Court judge, but maybe they're not. But hopefully what Alice does is our highest court in the land telling the other courts across the country, and there are hundreds of judges, you know, from all over the motu with all kinds of backgrounds, that okay, you need to show deference to the people that are onto it in this area and be willing to acknowledge that's not always going to be you. If you were perhaps a judge that was raised in Christchurch and, you know, didn't have really much to do with Te Ao Māori.
Do you think, how confident are you that this will ignite a change?
I think you have some new judges that are replacing the old guard that are more alive, I think, to te tiriti and the future that we know is going to happen under Māti Ke Mai. But, yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm quietly optimistic, but I tend to fall on the more critical side of things, and I think that's good. You need those critical thinkers to push us forward. Otherwise, we're just going to end up as like a ornament in what is otherwise a Pākehā space.
Right, an ingredient is how Justice Joe describes it, right? Just an ingredient in otherwise common law. This is kind of a woo-woo question, but what do you think Matua Moana would have made of those judgments?
Shit.
Get in his mind.
I treasured Matua Moana's perspectives on so many things, and I know lots of us did. He was like a mentor and sounding board for so many, such a treasure and a huge loss. So, yeah, I think he would have been critical, because that's not the Māti Ke Mai future that he sees, where it's potentially Māori having our own systems, not having to go within a mainstream Pākehā system, which is what I saw in, you know, in the States, Native American nations having their own systems. So it's possible. It's not beyond it. You know, it's not like this radical idea that's impossible. I think it's what Māti Ke Mai says. It's what I think we'll probably see in the next 20 to 40 years is Māori nations, for example, Tūhoe is a nation, but, you know, that maybe that they will go along the pathway of having their own dispute processes, their own governance entities. Yeah, but that's, you know, that's what I think Moana might say, but I wouldn't want to speak for that legend.
How do you think you can do that without
pissing off rednecks?
Oh yeah, well, it's just all without ghettoizing, you know what I mean? So it's like, no, this is your area here where you can have your rule and you can only do it in there. Like I'm sort of thinking about reservations and First Nations, you know, and how they're kind of co-opted by, well, this is my whakaro. To me, it looks like it was co-opted by the US government to be like, oh, we'll just push you over here, and also we're going to swap your good bit of land for this crap bit of land. How do you think you can make that work in a way that's not going to further subjugate Māori or any, you know, Indigenous people?
Yeah, well, and even like the casino debate, like I realised why they turned to casinos, because of the fact that there wasn't much else to do on that land that they were given. I think it's not really like the idea of kind of separate nations isn't, you know, I think there's a way through te tiriti that you can still maintain the relationship. with non-Māori, but yeah, it's a delicate debate. You know, I don't think we don't have territories in the same way that the reservations exist. So it would be a different kind of sovereignty. It might be like you can voluntarily sign up to agree by the tikanga of the Sorohi when you enter into it. So if you enter the Tūhoe Nation, you are agreeing to abide by the kawa and tikanga, and if you make a mistake, then you'll be you'll voluntarily go under their jurisdiction. But yeah, it's kind of something that's geeky because I wrote about this at overseas about contract as a way to get people to abide by what is otherwise a nation. But yeah, you don't know. Listeners would be asleep by now.
That, I think that's awesome. I'm like, I love the idea. It's like
an awesome idea. But would you sign it though, Mediana? Would you?
Yeah. Depends who's doing the standover. Yeah. Hey? Yeah. If you get a cousin to do
anything to get into Te Tai Tokero.
Who's going to hand out the punishment? That's what I want to know.
No,
that's a great. Yeah.
Just thinking creatively. Yeah. Like we've always been innovative, creative thinkers, and we could do the same. You know, like, I guess we know that the Crown's not going to give us back our own, you can have self-governance, we can barely get co-governance. So, you know, it's just like, okay, what can we creatively do in the system to make our own by Māori for Māori outcomes? God, yeah, my. So that's a cool thing. You know, I think a lot of younger lawyers and thinkers are really on that kind of more active role, I think. It's good, yeah. Because lawyers can be very conservative too, eh? Like a lot of our, a lot of people, which is okay. But
I think, it's understandable, right? Your whole mahi is to, like, understand the law, follow the law. I can imagine it'd be tricky sometimes to step outside of that. And you're like, what if this wasn't the law, though? Let's expand the whakaaro.
Yeah. That's why I think going overseas is good for us, like, as thinkers and for lawyers, you know. Go overseas, you realise that we haven't got it all great here in Aotearoa. Sorry, that's a tangent.
Yeah, I'm interested actually in another tangent on what it's like working as a lawyer, as a Māori lawyer at the moment. Like how large are our numbers out there in the legal system, on that side of the legal system at the moment? Is it, largest cohort ever?
I think so. I think these, I don't want to say they're Māori lawyers and then they're Māori lawyers, but that's probably true in the sense that some, I don't know. I think there's a more critical mass at the moment, but maybe it's a difficult time for anyone to make a living. And in the law, it's the same. So I think getting those opportunities to make sure that you're, being exposed to people like Annette Sykes and Rotorua or Moana and his mahi, and those really kind of critical transformative thinkers, I think, is what we need more of.
Yeah.
Because you can just become a little bit indoctrinated if you go work for Te Puni Kōkiri or the Crown and a Crown organisation and just think, yay, we're starting our hui with a karakia and we're finishing with it and that's our partnership in action. I don't know. It's just I come from this. And I think I'm privileged in the sense that I've, I don't feel like I need to please people or play those games that a lot of younger lawyers I know have to just survive and get through. And I come from a place of privilege in that sense. So, but I feel obligated. I've got to keep pushing. Can't just accept that, like I said before, pō whakaaro outside of a prison is te tiriti in action. That's that metaphor of our culture just being ceremonial or just token. It's just bullshit, really.
Hard.
I remember hearing you talk about how one of our worst youth offender facilities was called Korowai Manaaki.
Yeah.
Which is just such a beautiful, welcoming name for such a terrible place.
Yeah, just triggering me. Totally. It's just weird.
And what struck me when I heard you talk about that was just how those young people going through that system will forever connect those words with something traumatic, not their actual true meaning, no matter what they know the true meaning of those words to be.
Yep.
And what is sort of your youth advocacy looking like at the moment? And is this foray into tikanga and common law, is that going to help our young ones?
Yeah, it's quite removed, eh? Like when I went to the Supreme Court, I was really like the carrying the bags for Natalie and others for the Alice team. It's a different world. It's like a five-star hotel, flash resort, you know. You get your own room and there's coffee and tea, and then out in Monaco there's none of those niceties. So it was a different world, but, yeah, it's pretty removed, eh? You're in the Supreme Court arguing tikanga in a case for a non-Māori versus Hone in Korowai Manaaki just trying to get out so he can see his missus or see his whānau. It's a different world.
But it's a flash place, eh? It's incredibly beautiful but intimidating, the Supreme Court.
It's good that we can enter those spaces, though. Like, we need more leading Māori lawyers to take on those cases and to argue them. In the same way, though, we need more Māori in Manukau, because there's not many. I think what happens is the good lawyers get taken to the bench pretty quickly, and then, you know, you lose a generation of real good thinkers. So,
what does taken to the bench mean for those of us that aren't familiar?
Oh, yeah, taken to the to the what bench? The judicial
the
bench.
The pipeline topic?
Yeah, the pipeline. to become a judge. Usually, a lot of you know, the lawyers. I'm thinking of someone like Ofer Cassidy, who was made a judge pretty recently in Manukau. Awesome addition, but she's a big loss for Māori lawyers, because you are a little bit isolated when you're a judge. You can't really do things or say things like for example what I'm doing now.
Have you been asked?
No. I think that's a long term thing. You know, I'm kind of on the mahi waka with my small whānau, and like a big goal for me is, like I said, to create opportunities for other Māori to change the face of the law. Say the Mike Smith case is another recent climate change case. In the court there, it was good to see Māori leading the arguments, and I just want to see that more, normalise it, that we're everywhere, we can be the leading lawyers in the country, we can do it all.
Good boy.
What do you think about some of the, like, for instance, to me it struck me, but it was kind of a no-do moment where it was like, the argument in the Peter Ellis case that your mana doesn't end because you die, and actually arguably it increases, you know. That to me feels, when that was stated, it was like, yeah, of course, you can't do anything about your reputation once you're passed. And yet, we get taught in media about defamation, right? That's like, oh, okay, to buy, once you're dead, you can't defame them, don't worry. What do you think about that particular aspect, or having that as part of law? Like, is that something, of course you shouldn't be able to, of course it should matter more if someone's passed away, how they're treated or talked about.
I think it's a good thing, because what we were left with otherwise was that it's all about money. That's what the cases were saying. That it's, okay, if there's money at stake, then the money thing is determinative of whether a case can continue. So I think it's like, okay, we need the law to reflect New Zealand, not Britain or any other country. So there could be other changes in the future to, say, defamation. I think you can definitely impinge someone's character after they've died. That could be another area in the future that's looked at, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Was that actually ticker for me to, I'm like, oh, I'm getting way out of my realm here. I'm like, defamation, man after death, eek. I don't know if that was ticker, but.
No, that sounds.
Applicable to me.
Yeah.
I'm one of these journalists who wanted to be a lawyer, but was like, oh, it seems really hard. So I became a journalist instead, and now just geek out about this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm interested in the incorporation test for customary law or whatever. Justice Joe talked in his judgment about how antiquated the test is currently. I assume that it was just sort of cut and paste from Westminster kind of a thing, that you can use customary law, or in this case tikanga Māori, if it meets all of these different requirements of New Zealand law. What is the incorporation test, and why does it need to go?
Yeah, I think the incorporation test is like that tikanga needs to meet these certain thresholds of kind of relevance or existence for it to continue in a judge's decision. And that's just like back to front to me. It's kind of like that antiquated view of Indigenous culture as part of the flora and fauna, or as like a system that's not capable of continuing for generations because of, it's a savage kind of system. Mm. So that's kind of like what I view the test as, and I personally just disregard that. But I understand why Justice Williams had to engage with it. I think the other interesting thing they talked about was tikanga as its own source of law, and the metaphor that Natalie and others used was a whariki. So the weaver is trying to weave the different sources of, or the different parts of two parts of harakeke together to make a whariki, and that's strong enough to withstand, you know, being broken. And in order to make it properly, you need to kind of play equal weight or attention to each part, and it's not kind of just becomes one law, but it's different parts or different strands. So that's, I think, where things are going, in the sense that we need to recognise the mana of tikanga as a separate strand or source, rather than just this idea that can come into the common law and be weighed up alongside European values. Because I think when that weighing happens, it's always the European ideas that win.
Yeah.
Which is like, just not, that's not a te riti approach either. That's, how is that tino ranga tiritanga? And that's another thing, you know, post Alice, I was thinking about, well, is this te tiriti in action or what? Yeah, I don't know. I'm just saying these rhetorical things.
Would this be the outcome if he was Māori?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I can't really, I want to answer that, but I don't know. I think there've been many other cases like Peter that may not have gone that pathway. It's hard to say. Like, I think the timing and climate was right, in the sense that it was a huge miscarriage of justice what happened to him. And the court saw this as probably a case that was not easy, but was a clear example. So, okay, let's do this. But in the case of a Māori, there's always going to be racism. There's always going to be, So, no, I think you're onto it, Te Kuru. Like, I can't really say what would happen. But, I know where you're coming from.
I guess we have to wait and see.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I'd hope so, because otherwise, we give a lot of our culture and values, so there has to be some utu'e or balance.
Oh, and it's obvious from just looking at the state of some political parties at the moment, no names, that we can't really leave it up to central government, to guide and lead these conversations.
Yeah.
That's just me. I'm just deeply cynical about it.
No, I'm cynical too. Even the Herald, but reading out an article that I read about the tikanga commentary, it was just a terrible understanding.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, yeah, cool, we need, but all of our spaces, we need te tiriti reflected, in the media space, everything.
At every level.
It's an interesting point that Kingi raises, because a lot of the articles that I've sort of skimmed through in preparation for this potty, they don't even really mention it. So a lot of them, you can see that the writer has gone through, extreme lengths to make sure it's not at the top. Radio interviews, written articles. I challenge people to go out and have a look around and see which articles actually do justice to this topic, in terms of tikanga being the reason why this case had the outcome that it's had. And that just reflects the state of our media. So, yeah, that's a great point that you've made there. There's still this huge misunderstanding and unwillingness to embrace.
Yeah, unless it's convenient. That's the points of convenience, eh? That whole argument about when it's convenient for us to invite the Māori into the hui to do the karakia, that's cool. But if you want to talk about te tiriti or something, no. We've done our part. So that's kind of like the challenge for all of us in our different spheres of influences, to keep pushing those Pākehā who hold the pen or who make the decisions to say, actually, no, that's not enough. Read Mā Tika Mai and come back once you've, educated yourself. And it's not my job to educate you.
Do you ever find for yourself, because, the opposite of that is, they'll roll you out for a karakia, but then the opposite is that you're also expected to be the expert on everything. So it's like, explain tikanga, explain its application. Is that something that you mentioned earlier about how you're like, nope, defer to, tāpō temara in this case? But, yeah, is that something you face when you are trying to bring te ao Māori into your practice and it applies to your mahi? And how do you balance that, not, trying to be like, I'm not the expert, but also, yeah, I want to include this.
Yeah, it's a hard thing, I think, for all of us, eh? Like in our areas. It's kind of like a fine balance for me because I get opportunities because people might say, you know something about this, but I'm definitely not an expert. So I'm always willing to work in a team, to be collaborative, to defer to experts, to hand that arco to someone else. I think that's just a good approach. But you've got to be careful because every organization wants their treaty compliance stamp. So they might say to me, Kingi, can you write an opinion to give us the stamp of approval that we are treaty compliant? And sometimes I'll be like, yeah, I'll take your money, but that doesn't mean you're treaty compliant. Yeah, so it's just the balance. It's difficult. And I think we just need to keep each other in check too, that no one goes out there and starts saying, oh, yeah, here's your stamp. You're all good.
Yeah, because there's bound to be a bit of that going on.
For sure. Yeah, it's a it's a big industry. Yeah, here's the treaty lens or the treaty consultancy kind of area. Yeah.
Mm.
It's a different world to the marae.
Given that sort of a bidural system seems inevitable.
Yep.
What then do, I guess, people working within our legal system and our justice system actually need to be doing to get ready for it? What are they reading? Who are they talking to? What are they watching? I guess same goes for the rest of us, so we're just interested in how this rolls out next year, 10 years, 100 years from now.
I think one of the good things is the law school curriculum's been changed to have tikanga as like a key part of it. So that will generate a whole generation, hopefully, of more competent lawyers.
Cool.
But the thing is, who's going to teach that all? Like, who are going to be the teachers? Because we're already, like, lots of the tikanga experts are just thinking of Tāpō. You can't rely on him to teach every law student. You know, people are already under a lot of pressure as it is. So, yeah, there's that. There's Mātiki Mai. I think that's, like, for me, that's what every high school should read and every teacher should have as part of their curriculum, is unpacking that. Rather than those Land Wars videos, I don't know if you watch those. Probably not at your kura, but
does Sir Pō Te Mara need and Sir Hiriri Mokomid and those types of those experts? Do they need to create a school where they bring in young or experienced Māori lawyers, and then these people are then they train them up? Possibly, I don't know. You know, I'm not saying they should do that because they've obviously got their own.
Yeah,
commitments and
I think so. Yeah, you could do that. I think I'm just thinking of the different people that I know, like Jacinta Uru, Natalie Coates, Metiria Ture, all these super wahine that are leading this curriculum change. I think it's in safe hands. I'm sure they've thought about that. Yeah, but you could have like a wānanga, right, or Punnies for Lawyers.
Love a wānanga. Punnies for Lawyers.
Punnies for Lawyers, yo. Rau.
Yeah, there's going to be wānangas for days on this particular subject.
Yeah, or even Mātiki Mai, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's another couple.
Can I propose a fun hypothetical? Okay, what we could all say, I actually haven't thought of mine yet, though, but like, so if we've got our like tikanga nations, what would be a tikanga that if someone was to come into your order here, that you're like, yeah, this is like, that's different from the current law.
What would be a tikanga that's different from the law?
Oh, it doesn't have to be different.
Mine would be if you don't whakapapa to that iwi, then you have to give a percentage of your kaimoana catch to local marae and
kaimoana. Mine would actually be all around kai as well. I want to eat me some kereru. I want to eat all the things that the law says I'm not allowed to eat, but my ancestors said were yum.
Yeah, I was thinking about taxation, you know.
That works too.
Yeah, that's a form of tax. Yeah, you pay your toll or your tax when you come into the law here.
That's good.
Yeah, rates, you know, we all pay rates.
Yeah, koha.
Some of that should go back into Māori infrastructure because Aotearoa was once whenua Māori.
Mm.
Still is whenua Māori, and we're all ratepayers.
Doc.
That's an extreme radical view. That's the one that, that'll push some buttons.
Mm. Those are good things, though, eh? To have. I was at a with you on Saturday about Matiki Mai stuff, and that was inspiring and kept me going, you know, beyond the seeing Hone out in Woody Prison this morning and being triggered by that poem.
Yeah. So that's fresh.
So you mentioned that po for Kairo outside the prison and how that affected you. Can you just tell us what was going through your mind?
Yeah, so with kind of visiting prisons, they're pretty depressing, fucked up places. And I was just struck by the presence of a po for Kairo outside of a prison gate, which is a big metal barbed wire electric fence structure, with this lonely po standing there in solitude kind of outside the fence. As if, for me, it was a metaphor for where we are at as a country, that our culture is ceremonial, our culture is decorative, our culture is on the outside as an ornament rather than part of the workings of that prison. Because when you go through the gates, my experience is there's no tikanga Māori, there's no kawa, there's no te tiriti. It's a place that is completely Western in its approach, except it houses all our people. So that, yeah, that really struck me and really pissed me off, in the same way that the names of prisons like Korowai Manaaki is our youth prison in South Auckland. I guess it's quite easy for me to get triggered though, but I think that's a real stark example that you could say, well, if you were going around educating Pākehā about te tiriti, I would just show them that photo and be like, this is not what we want. For te tiriti. Yeah. We don't want to be the po for Kairo outside the prison. We want you to change the prison itself to be te tiriti compliant, or demolish the prison and have a future that means we don't need prisons here.
Kia ora.
Oh, and then like there's prisons built on wahi tapu, eh? Like ngā whā, that never ceases to break my heart every time.
Yeah, yeah. All of them are named. Nearly all have Māori names. And even like in Whanganui, the high security prison is called the Hinaki, which I was just like, what the heck is that about? Like a Hinaki is colloquially called the prison, where you know, like you might talk to whānau, oh, where's so-and-so? Oh, he's in the Hinaki. Mm. But to actually name that as the building, I was just like, what the hell?
It's a bit on the nose.
Yeah. Anyway, but...
Oh, wait, so Hinaki... Oh, so Hinaki is like a colloquial term for prison.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I was like, oh, were there a lot of tuna there or...
Yeah, you're a Hinaki, you're stuck in the trap and you're not going to get out.
Oh.
But the fact that they call that... The building has the word Hinaki on the side of it. This is a corrections prison. Their mixed security is the Hinaki. I was just like, that's too much. I can't handle this. And I hope I hope there was no kaumātua brought in to bless and give that name.
Oh, bro.
That's
grim.
That's a different one, eh? I've never heard about that. They took that word, that kupu, from the community?
I don't know. I didn't want to ask. I was too, you know, part of me is like, it's not my place in the sense I'm not from Whanganui, but I was just mortified by that.
Yep.
Yeah. But there's so many of those examples, that's not alone. But that was a pretty bad one.
Out the gate.
Yeah.
Tēnā koe, Kingi, thank you so much for joining us today. That was a real fascinating chat. Many complex layers. I don't think any of us claim to be much smarter on the other side of that conversation, but it's really, really helpful to sort of help think through some of the processes that people are going to be facing in our courts, that judges are going to have to be grappling with. So, nei rā te mihi kia koe e ho, nei te mahi nui. Ki te arahi a mātou, i ruku nei te mātauranga ture, so he mihi nunui ki a koe. Kia kōroa, Mariana Johnson and te kuru Jews, tēnā kōroa i hō mai, pia tātā na kōroa, ia rā, ia wiki, ia marama. Anō nei me mihi nunui kia te Aihe Butler, tō mātou kaiwhakahaere, pāhorangi a te kaiurungi o ne. Big shout out to Te Aihe, our producer. Whai mai I tā tātou pai āhua. Follow us on Instagram, ne, Te Ao Māori Podcast, whakarongo mai. I runga I our Apple Podcasts, me Spotify. So we'll see you again in 2 weeks' time. Kia mau tonu mai, hei a kua nei.
Nair is public interest journalism funded through New Zealand On Air and brought to you by the Spinoff Podcast Network. It was hosted and researched by Leonie Hayden with Te Kuru Jews and Mariana Johnson.
Nair was produced by Te Aihe Butler, with senior production from Jane Yee and project management from Mark Kelleher.
Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spinoff Podcast Network.